KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 9:02, we have cloudy skies, a few sprinkles in the air, and 74 degrees in Atlantic. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. The news is brought to you by First Whitney Bank and Trust, a home-owned, home-operated bank located at 3rd and Chestnut and 7th and Chestnut in Atlantic. Well, you may recall over the past couple of hours, we've been telling you about a stolen vehicle that was reported missing from Atlantic early this morning. And on that note, Atlantic Police Chief Steve Green is issuing a reminder to citizens to not only remove their keys from their vehicles, to make sure their vehicles are locked at all times when not in use. Green reports that in recent days, they've experienced a number of incidents in which vehicles have been entered and items, including vehicle keys, have been removed. One of the most recent thefts has resulted in the vehicle being stolen a few days after the keys were found to have been missing. Again, the Green is reminding you to remove your keys from your vehicle, make sure they're locked at all times when not in use. The vehicle reported stolen this morning was a black 2004 GMC Sierra pickup from Atlantic, and that was taken from the 600 block of East 8th Street. License plate on that vehicle is 808, M as in Mary, C as in Charles, F as in Frank, and it was stolen sometime between 11 o'clock last night and 5:30 this morning. If you spot that vehicle, you're asked to call your local law enforcement agency. News time is 9:03.
We're the only bank you'll ever need. First Whitney Bank.
Let's face it, buying a home or even considering whether to refinance your current home can be a complicated and overwhelming experience. Fortunately, we can help. Hi, this is Chip at First Whitney Bank in Atlantic. When you discover your next home or are interested in refinancing your current home, give First Whitney Bank a call. With interest rates at historic lows, it is the perfect time to act. Let our experienced lenders guide you into the mortgage that will best suit your financial needs, as well as explain how refinancing could save you money. Owning your own home is one of the smartest investment decisions you will ever make. So is choosing First Whitney Bank for all your banking needs. Local bankers making local decisions. First Whitney Bank in Atlantic, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
We're the only bank you'll ever need. First Whitney Bank.
Elsewhere in state news, a 34-year-old Marshalltown man faces a felony charge after firing a warning shot into the ground when he confronted a man he'd seen in his backyard. Police say Clayton Jensen reported he spotted the man looking under a tarp in Jensen's backyard on July the 31st. Jensen says he followed the man out of his yard but fired a warning shot when the man turned and made a threatening gesture. Marshalltown Assistant Police Chief Brian Batterson said Jensen should have left the scene if he felt threatened. Jensen's been charged with going armed with intent. The other man, 18-year-old Abelardo Gonzalez, has pleaded guilty to misdemeanor trespassing. The 1st Battalion, 168th Infantry, has a storied military history starting with the Civil War. From the early days of the American Civil War to recent operations in Afghanistan just weeks ago, the 1st Battalion, 168th Infantry of the Iowa Army National Guard has played a vital role in defending America since 1861. Well, on August the 8th, on Monday, the current and former soldiers from Southwest Iowa who served in the historic unit will gather to celebrate the unit's 150th birthday. That event takes place at 10 a.m. on the front porch and lawn of the historic Dodge House at 605 3rd Street in Council Bluffs. The public is welcome to attend the event, which will feature a cake cutting along with uniform and equipment displays from both the Civil War and the unit's most recent campaign in Afghanistan. The 1st Battalion, 168th Infantry, was originally organized into 10 companies by Colonel Granville Dodge as the 4th Regiment Iowa Volunteer Infantry. They were mustered into federal service on August the 18th of 1861 at Camp Kirkwood, located just south of what is now Council Bluffs. And they were called to duty to fight in the Civil War, the 1898 Philippine Insurrection, World War I, and World War II. In recent history, of course, the 1st Battalion, 168th Infantry, began the first of two Afghanistan deployments after they were ordered into federal active service on March the 5th, 2004, and released September 1st, 2005. They were once again deployed to Afghanistan, mobilizing in July of last year with the 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 34th Infantry Division, as part of the Guard's largest call-up since World War II. The unit returned home to Iowa last month. Today, the 1st Battalion, 168th Infantry, is comprised of the following units: Headquarters and Headquarters Company, located in Council Bluffs, Johnston, and Spencer; Company A, located in Carroll, Boone, and Storm Lake; Company B, whose soldiers report to Shenandoah, Council Bluffs, and Corning; C Company, based out of Johnston and Newton; Company D in Denison; and Company F, 334th Brigade Support Battalion, based out of Red Oak and Council Bluffs. The partial shutdown of the Federal Aviation Administration is threatening plans for a runway project at the Des Moines International Airport. The airport's parking projects are locally funded and are continuing, but the airport's aviation director, Don Smithy, says a refurbishment of a major taxiway planned for next year is imperiled unless Congress acts on the FAA funding when it returns to work in September. The Des Moines project is expected to cost $20 to $30 million. Smithy said the project money would come from a trust funded by ticket and jet fuel taxes and other fees. He said the trust is not being funded right now. Smithy said that if the project goes unfunded, the airport will just continue to patch the taxiway. There's more money in the pipeline to buy new trains for Illinois and other states, including Iowa. The U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood announced Wednesday that Illinois, California, Michigan, Missouri, and Iowa will get about $335 million to buy next-generation trains. That brings the amount of money awarded to those five states and Washington State to buy trains to around $782 million. The Transportation Department said the funds will go toward purchasing 33 locomotives and 120 bi-level passenger cars. The states will use a joint procurement process to get favorable prices on the equipment. Transportation officials say President Obama's administration has kicked in more than $10 billion to lay the groundwork for those in other states to develop higher-speed rail networks. Iowa is already one of the national leaders in wind energy, but a study finds that the next step needed for a major transmission or a major expansion of wind power in Iowa is the building of more transmission lines. The Center for Rural Affairs is releasing a report called Connect the Dots, Transmission and Rural Communities. Reported author John Ledlick says that there are more wind turbines out there that are not connected to the power grid.
There's already 275,000 megawatts of actual turbines constructed, just not producing electricity because they're not hooked up to lines. And this problem is just going to continue as time goes on, and it's a great time to tackle it now.
Ledlick says there is a need for a considerable buildup of transmission lines across the region.
It looks like we'll need about 30,000 to 40,000 miles over the next 20 years or so, which is going to come out to about $12 billion to $16 billion per year as we improve this infrastructure.
Ledlick says a private-public partnership may be one way to get the investments needed to upgrade the grid.
Historically, utilities have paid for all the transmission because they owned all the transmission. At this point, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission released a rule about 10 years ago that says each utility can't be the only ones to use the transmission line. They need to let other generating sources use it. So those utilities will pay for a lot of it, but we're seeing an increase in private investors actually paying for some of the transmission lines.
Ledlick says over the past 25 years, electricity demand has exceeded transmission expansion by about 25% every year. He says each $1 billion invested in transmission results in nearly 13,000 full-time equivalent years of employment. The Center for Rural Affairs is based in Lyons, Nebraska. The Iowa Board of Regents has a full agenda for its day-long meeting at the University of Northern Iowa. The board today is expected to set salaries for leaders of Iowa's public universities, take steps to help the Iowa Braille and Sight-Saving School in Benton rebuild after a devastating windstorm, and discuss the search for the next Iowa State University president. The meeting is the first in public since Iowa Farm Bureau President Craig Lang became the board's president and agribusiness leader Bruce Rastetter moved up to president pro tem. Lang and Rastetter replaced David Miles and Jack Evans under a leadership shakeup which was organized by Republican Governor Terry Branstad. The board met privately at the campus in Cedar Falls on Wednesday to review the performance of university presidents. The Iowa and Nebraska chapters of the American Civil Liberties Union are requesting the largest law enforcement agencies in the state to disclose whether they track suspects using cell phone location data. The Nebraska ACLU chapter has sent letters to the Nebraska State Patrol and the Omaha and Lincoln Police Departments seeking the information under Nebraska's public records law. The Iowa ACLU has sent a similar request to the police departments of our five largest cities in the state. The two chapters are among 34 ACLU state affiliates who are seeking such information across the nation. Nebraska ACLU Legal Director Amy Miller says her organization believes police should not be allowed to track a person's cell phone without obtaining a warrant from the court. The governor's office and the leader of the union representing the largest share of state workers are blaming each other for problems with the state's prison system. Danny Homan, president of AFSCME Council 61, claims the nine correctional facilities around the state are suffering from extreme understaffing. And Homan is calling for a special legislative session to address the matter. Tim Albrecht, Republican Governor Branstad's spokesman, says Homan helped to create the problem when his union negotiated massive salary increases with then-Governor Chet Culver.
The second phase is going to be increased visibility. It's not good enough.
Danny Homan sat silent on the sidelines as Governor Culver and legislative Democrats slashed funding for corrections by millions of dollars. Now, after years of reckless and irresponsible budgeting by Governor Culver and millions in unsustainable pay raises from Danny Homan, he wants to grandstand and take political cheap shots.
Homan disputes Albrecht's use of the word massive in conjunction with the pay raises.
The majority of state employees that this union bargained for got a 2% raise on July 1, will get a 1% raise on January 1, period. That's not massive.
He notes that Governor Branstad gave that same pay raise to his management and exempt employees. Albrecht says Branstad increased funding to corrections by $25 million after years of severe cuts by the Culver administration. He claims the governor's action prevented hundreds of layoffs at prisons.
So, unfortunately, this financial mess was caused by Danny Homan himself, who forced a massive $30 million salary increase over the next 2 years in corrections alone, with the sweetheart deal he cut with outgoing Governor Chet Culver.
Homan says Branstad needs to stop blaming workers for his failed policies.
Chet Culver did a 10% across-the-board cut. All right, we didn't lay off a single person in the AFSCME bargaining units during that period. So I don't know what he's talking about, other than they're trying to profess that Governor Branstad is some sort of savior. He ain't.
Homan claims gang activity at the prison in Clarinda is through the roof, and he worries it's only a matter of time before something very serious happens in one of the state's prisons because of understaffing. Homan says to make matters worse, Iowa Corrections Director John Baldwin has banned overtime for prison staffers. News time is 9:13.
We're the only bank you'll ever need. First Whitney Bank.
Let's face it, buying a home or even considering whether to refinance your current home can be a complicated and overwhelming experience. Fortunately, we can help. Hi, this is Chip at First Whitney Bank in Atlantic. When you discover your next home or are interested in refinancing your current home, give First Whitney Bank a call. With interest rates at historic lows, it is the perfect time to act. Let our experienced lenders guide you into the mortgage that will best suit your financial needs, as well as explain how refinancing could save you money. Owning your own home is one of the smartest investment decisions you will ever make. So is choosing First Whitney Bank for all your banking needs. Local bankers making local decisions. First Whitney Bank in Atlantic, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
We're the only bank you'll ever need. First Whitney Bank.
And in our funeral announcements, 95-year-old Wanda Barrett of Panora died Monday. Funeral services for Wanda Barrett will be this morning at 10 o'clock at the First Christian Church in Panora. Twig Funeral Home in Panora has the arrangements. 79-year-old Irene Crozier of Coon Rapids died Sunday. Funeral services for Irene Crozier will be held today at 10:30 at the Odie Funeral Home in Coon Rapids. 62-year-old Burdell Hansen of Audubon died Sunday. Funeral services for Burdell Hansen will be at 10:30 at the St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Audubon. Kessler Funeral Home in Audubon has the arrangements. 77-year-old Dorothy Ann Hansen of Atlantic died Monday. Funeral services for Dorothy Hansen will be this afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Exira Christian Church. Kessler Funeral Home in Exira has the arrangements. 88-year-old Mary Olive Swanson of Stewart died Tuesday. Funeral services for Mary Swanson will be on Friday at 10 o'clock at the Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart. 90-year-old Irma Blakely of Cranston, Rhode Island, died Sunday. Graveside services for Irma Blakely will be on Friday at 11 a.m. at the Harlan Cemetery. Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan has the arrangements. 81-year-old Patricia Ann Pat Ursham Keating of Casey died Sunday. Funeral services for Patricia Keating will be this Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Casey United Methodist Church. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart has arrangements. 69-year-old James George Kearns of Stewart died Friday in Minneapolis. A gathering of family, friends, and visitation for James Kearns will be held Saturday from 6 until 8 p.m. at the Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart. 82-year-old Bernard Harold Gittens of Stewart died Wednesday. A massive Christian burial service for Bernard Gittens will be held on Monday at 10 o'clock at the All Saints Catholic Church in Stewart. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart has arrangements. and 92-year-old Wilma Billy McGill Inhofe of Woodbine and formerly of Atlantic died Sunday. Funeral services for Wilma Billy Inhofe will be held on Monday at 11 o'clock at the Fouts Funeral Home in Woodbine. That is a check of our news and funeral announcements on KJAN, brought to you by First Whitney Bank and Trust, a home-owned, home-operated bank at 3rd and Chestnut and 7th and Chestnut in Atlantic. I'm Rick Henson reporting.